Welcome to Just Out of Curiosity, a podcast that talks about sex and sexuality from the lens of a sex-positive brown woman that has a fascination with alternative or non-conventional lifestyles. My name is Shelly D, and I am that sex-positive brown woman. Over the course of several episodes, I'm excited to dive into topics that titillate my interests and make me ask my guests questions just out of curiosity. And so my curiosity today leads to this crazy world that we live in. Some people want to make things, some people want to lead. I spend a lot of time wondering what makes us all so different, yet so intertwined and connected in society. My parents, especially my mother, would get so annoyed because I'm that person who, if we're all talking about something and someone asks a question and no one knows the answer, I have to be that person that has to find the answer. I'm always looking up things I don't know on my phone. It then spreads from things I don't know to why things are the way they are. It's just so interesting to me. We have the internet at our fingertips. We have the ability to know what's happening all over the world and almost predict what's going to happen next. But maybe because we have this information overload, we forget where we've come from sometimes. I've spent a season talking to people where the underlying factor is identity and issues stemming from societal constructs of gender. When I went to university a good 20 years ago, I was taught that there was a difference between sex and gender. Now, I think that we have updated ourselves since this time, but sex was your biological makeup and gender was something that was unique to you. And that is something that I think has stuck since then. It's a social construct based on your lived experience, culture, and innate characteristics, or something I was told when I was younger in Catholic elementary school, that were your God-given talents. However you want to see that, if you're not religious, it doesn't matter. I still think we're all born with our own innate abilities. And that's what gender is. It's a social construct that is specific and unique to yourself. It's not prescribed masculine and femininity qualities that people have told us that we have to be. What has been labeled masculine and feminine are constantly changing and have been evolving. The idea that pink is a girl's color? Let's throw down some facts. Until the 18th century, both men and women adorned themselves with elaborate dresses. Costume historians have highlighted that there were no prominent gender distinctions in dress until the 19th century. Men and women in elite class loved to show off their velvets, their fine silks, lace, decorative footwear, wigs, head embellishments, and scented powders. Very masculine dress had men in pink suits, gold and silver jewelry, and embroidered shirts, regardless of choice of color or ornaments worn. The more intricate the dress, the higher up you were in society. Fashion was not only a woman's affair then. It became feminized since the 19th century when gender representation became stronger than societal class. Up to the mid-19th century, children wore gender-neutral white clothing until about 6 in North America. At the beginning of the 20th century in America, some stores began suggesting sex-appropriate colors. In 1918, there's a quote from the trade publication Earnshaw's Infants Department that claimed, quote, "The generally accepted rule is pink is for boys and blue for the girls. The reason is that pink being a more decided and stronger color is more suitable for the boy, while blue, which is more delicate and dainty, is prettier for the girl," end quote. Additionally, a 1927 issue of Time noted that large-scale department stores in Boston, Chicago, and New York suggested pink for boys. It wasn't until about 1940s and a new way of marketing children's clothing to parents made the opposite change. Ask yourself in today's age why girls wear pink. It's all marketing. And it became even more prevalent with the introduction to prenatal testing to learn ahead of time what the gender your baby could be. This isn't about gender, but it's just highlighting how we fall for marketing schemes. That diamond ring you may be wearing on your finger that's marking engagement and a bold profession of love from your partner, that is a genius marketing scheme. Diamonds weren't really selling, and in the late 1940s, the slogan, "A diamond is forever," was created. And from then on, it all became about how many months' paycheck a man had to save in order to provide and acquire the nicest diamond to show their soon-to-be wife how much they loved her. Because De Beers had an abundance of diamonds to sell, and that marketing campaign took off. Marketing is amazing, and we fall for so many things based on a marketing campaign that we actually believe that this is the way of life. Let's go back even further. I've heard a lot of people say, God created Adam and Eve, God created two genders, people that just can't quite comprehend the progressiveness of some thinkings and way of life, or let's just call it wokeness. Today's life is not normal. We were never like this. I bring up the fashion evolution for this reason, but it's just so much more. So here's the thing. Western colonizers came to North America to set up shop in a new world. With that came very specific ideologies that probably stemmed from religion and high-class thinking. Except when I say high-class, it refers to a privileged European white male perspective. The definition of colonization is the action or process of settling among and establishing control over the indigenous people of an area. European settlers did whatever they could to differentiate themselves from the indigenous peoples there. What's needed for society? Laws, education, medicine and science, culture and business and economics. A set of defined rules as to how to behave and what to expect from the society that you're in. These pillars of society were written from the viewpoint of those privileged European white men. There is an inherent bias that runs among them to feature and favor one specific group of people, and everyone else has to fight their way in to be recognized. As we're learning in the States, white men had the right to citizenship from the beginning. Everyone else was just amended in. And as hard as they fought to be recognized, they don't have many rights to this day. Their rights can be so easily taken away, given a small group of Supreme Court judges and a very large group of disgruntled people, aka whom I'm calling the Republicans on the extreme religious end, that believe their rights and religious freedoms are being taken away. How dare us? Because other people are asking to be recognized and represented. I somewhat digress. I really shouldn't be getting into Roe v. Wade right now. Back to this set of defined rules and how we like to behave and what to expect from where we're residing in. Some people live and thrive in a world where they know their expectations and just operate within them. It's one less thing to think about, one less worry to have, like the expectation that after you finish school, you'll find a job. You'll settle down, create a family, retire, live that glorified retired life with the pension you've built up from working. With all of this comes dichotomies. They exist for this reason, to give us meaning to some things. Without love, there's hate. Without good, there's evil. And you can't really define one without the other. We just learn to live like that. But there's so many nuances in life that not everyone can live in those black and white terms. And let's be honest, those dichotomies, nothing is ever good or bad. It's nuanced. Not everyone can live that life that we've been told that we should have. Not everyone wants to live that life. Not everyone is afforded the same privileges that others get. Maybe you get divorced. Maybe you get laid off. Maybe you have issues finding a partner for a myriad of reasons. Maybe you're not Catholic, white, able-bodied, heterosexual, cisgender, have money, no allergies or medical issues. We've allowed ourselves to function in a specific way, and if anyone starts to tell you anything different, we become defensive, as if that person is specifically attacking us and calling us out. But the thing is, it's okay for other people to live differently than us. It doesn't really affect us in such a way that we have to tell them they can't be who they are. This is the one thing I've been thinking about a lot. There's a lot of issues with how we see gender, things that are masculine, things that are feminine, and how we perceive people based on those traits. There are a lot of episodes focused on gay men in this season of Just Out of Curiosity, probably because to me, it highlights the issues within masculinity. And to me personally, that's what we need to focus on the most. There's this prevalent thinking that men have to be strong, powerful, stoic, providers, muscular, sporty, and athletic. And there's nothing wrong with this, but they have been told that they always have to be this way. And to be anything else is feminine, bad, emotional, sensitive. Men shouldn't be emotional, shouldn't cry, shouldn't be sensitive, shouldn't really care about their health, which for some reason, that one just blows my mind more than anything. There's this prevalent thinking when I listen to cisgender men speak about their life that they'll die young or they should die young. They'll die in a blaze of glory, defending their honor, fighting in war, going out drowning in bottles of alcohol. I listen to it a lot and it just makes me feel sad for them. What were y'all deprived of that makes you think that you don't deserve to be happy? Why don't you think that you should be living a full life? It feels like masculinity needs a lot of love and compassion as well. And not just from themselves, but from everyone else too. If I think it's tough to be a woman, which you better believe it, it is. It's also tough to be a man. We talk so openly about body issues that women have, but not much is talked about the body issues that men have. We pretty much operate in a world where we believe it's weak to talk about your emotions and be vulnerable. But as Brené Brown has taught me, you're stronger being vulnerable. I've lived a life where I tried to dissociate myself from women growing up and those negative female emotions because of that penis envy, the power of the penis. I feel like the way I viewed certain types of men that are shorter than me, men that are thinner than me, men that are more submissive to me, is all because what I saw growing up was that a strong, powerful man will pick me up and whisk me away to love me. I was an alpha female and I needed an alpha male to keep up with me. I have spent a large part of the last 2 years in therapy and I'm realizing that all the holding back I did, how I thought I was so strong, suppressing my emotions, caused me to actually turn away relationships and friendships. I scoffed at people that cried too much. Now I'm realizing that I need a good cry every now and then. It grounds me. I've learned not to be embarrassed of my softer side. And as Brené says so well, vulnerability is not winning or losing. It's having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome. Vulnerability is not weakness. It is our greatest measure of courage. And that's essentially what I wanted to do with this podcast. As my friends and family may know very well about me, I don't have a problem standing up for equality when the conversation is getting too close-minded. I wanted to create something where I showed up and I have conversations in ways that I didn't think were happening. And I just let people speak about their lives. Everyone is an expert on their life and in their lived experience. I don't want to hear stories about people. I wanted to talk to them so they can say their story themselves. My hope is that someone may listen and realize that they're not alone and that there are allies out there. Because what it feels like is we all just want to be seen. We all just want to be heard and acknowledged and validated. Without getting too preachy, which I promised myself that I would try really, really hard not to do, and I really hope I'm not, there are a few other takeaways that I thought of when I kind of looked back at the other main points of the previous episode. The first is that sex education is essential. By the logic of transphobia and abortion reproductive issues, there's a lot of misinformation or gaps in people's awareness. For instance, I used to get annoyed with the statement of people have periods, but I realized I forgot about trans men. I'm not proud of it, but they could have the same reproductive systems as me. If I'm forgetting them from the equation, can you imagine all the parts of society that are forgetting them as well? The Principles of Pleasure on Netflix is a good example of learning a more female-focused sex education. Back to education being created by a very specific perspective, we have been taught sex education from the male perspective. Sexual intercourse and words such as penetration, fucking, they're all from the view of sex being penis-oriented. And while it is, I don't remember learning a lot about what happens to me as a woman during sex. What happens to the cervix and the vulva when having sex? What causes more lubrication? What makes it better? How do we derive pleasure from sex? And if that wasn't a priority for sex education back in the day, imagine being intersex or anyone with a disability. On another note, sex education also helps teach consent and body awareness. And that is something that every young child needs to be empowered to know. Going back to Lady Azelle's memory of gym class as a young girl and being taught that if someone is touching you and you don't like it, you just move their hand somewhere else rather than saying no or leaving. It's kind of crazy that even just the concept of saying no was never something that we were really taught. I personally don't think sex education strips innocence when done respectfully and age appropriately. I think teaching kids how to deal with gunmen and school shootings strips innocence from kids. But for some reason, we needed to adapt education to include this, but feel it unnecessary to adapt sexual education for today's age because parents are uncomfortable. Do you not think that kids are talking about stuff a lot earlier than you think they are? The minute they leave your house and they see other people, what do you think they're talking about? Kids know so much more than we do as adults. It's kind of crazy, but we just kind of forget that that happens and ignore it. I've also just done a lot of reflection on why I'm so closed off to dealing with emotions and being vulnerable. I grew up in the 80s, in the heyday of Disney movies and John Hughes movies. When I turned 16, I so strongly believed that I would get my first tube of red lipstick and it would look great on me, which it didn't. Have a great first kiss and fall in love with a boy. My first instances of all of that didn't really follow through with that same idealized version that I was told. But if I think about my youth, I was this innocent, naive girl, which I know that may be hard to believe, but I just so badly wanted to believe that flirting and kissing led to me being in a relationship with someone. But it didn't. People were using me, and it kind of broke me. Nobody warned me of that. Of people kissing me while they're in relationships with other people and lying about it, of being raped by strangers and friends. We're all pretty selfish when we're younger and we really only care about getting what we want. But I feel like if I wasn't sold such a pretty idealistic version of the world where everything is rainbows and unicorns and lipstick, I may not have been so ridiculously naive to the world around me and to the true intentions of some people. As mentioned earlier, the other takeaway that I have is that we all live in dichotomies. We, for some reason, love to live in dichotomies. Politics are a great example of this. I've heard this conversation happen so many times before, but people that are liberal don't like conservatives. I've heard even people say that they just can't even like conservatives, and it's probably the same vice versa. The thing is, we confuse people for things. You may not like certain types of people that come from the right, but it doesn't mean all conservatives are bad. It doesn't mean you can't be friends with a conservative. And it also means that parts of you cannot be conservative as well. Especially if you're thinking of your finances and the best way to protect them, you kind of need a little bit of that in there. It's interesting. I majored in linguistics and remember learning about one study. With dichotomies, there comes an us versus them mentality. And depending on what side of the dichotomy you're on, either you'll be vilified or they will be. The study looked at newspaper articles in the UK in regard to sexual assault cases back in the 60s or around that time. So the virgin whore dichotomy. The virgin side are anyone that appears to be virginal or innocent or good. Young girls, mothers, grandmothers. The whore side is basically anyone else. Sex workers, single women, anyone that partied or had guy friends, divorced women, if you were disgraced by society, let's say. If a sexual assault happened to anyone falling under the virgin dichotomy, the attacker was a monster. How dare they? She was so young and innocent. You're a terrible person. How dare you do this to her? But if the sexual assault happened to anyone falling under the whore dichotomy, then the lines got a little bit blurred. She brought it onto herself with what she was wearing. She was drinking or partying. She was flirting with him. Can you blame him? How could he have known? She was a sex worker, as if they bring assault onto themselves. And the attacker is not necessarily seen as bad, but probably more her fault for her demeanor. This line of thinking, especially when dealing with sexual assault cases, are still happening. I mean, Amber Heard and Johnny Depp? Jeez, that case has divided so many people. Die hard Johnny Depp fans or stans or whatever you want to call them now. Probably more stans because I feel like they're just crazier, hardcore about him. But Johnny Depp is not a good person. Somehow, a lot of people rush to Depp's defense. But he non-consensually raped her with a bottle because he thought she was hiding drugs. Like, we allow ourselves to make excuses for poor behavior if we don't want to like the other person. They both were in a toxic relationship. They both treated each other unfairly. Dichotomies are bad because they force us to just think of life in black and white. But there's so much gray area, and we want that gray area to exist because that's what gives us room to play. There's meaning to the saying that we're not free until everyone is free. The worst parts of misogyny show up in the LGBTQ2S+ community. And if I think I have it bad as a brown woman in Toronto, that's nothing compared to those that have added layers of intersection onto it. Those that are visibly different, such as with two-spirit, non-binary, gender non-conforming folks, and those that show more feminine or softer sides to them but are bullied for it. Because they're getting treated worse for being no different than me. Sometimes it's easier to be angry at the past and in how we set up society with these unconscious bias and microaggressions. But I don't know, I don't see the point in being angry about the past. It's infuriating. But what I think we need to focus on and what matters more than anything is how we shape and guide learning going forward. Inclusion, as annoying as it can be sometimes, is essential and crucial to growing better. And I may come off as an idealist. I wish it was this simple to help get over some of these issues we have with being progressive and woke. But all I can really hope is that we learn to look past our own shortcomings and realize there's more to life than just ourselves. And we should try to have some compassion and empathy to those that look different, are searching to be recognized, not fearing their lives to express their authentic selves. Because to me, life isn't worth living if you're not being authentic and creating space for others to be that too. I came across this quote when creating this podcast that really resonated with me from Ralph Waldo Emerson. The mind that opens to a new idea never returns to its original size. And so before I sign off, I want to give a huge thank you to all the guests, everyone that gave up their time to talk to me, John De La Cruz, who has helped me so much with the creation of this podcast and social media management of everything, to Jesse Wachter for creating all the promo clips and all the digital animations. But above all, stay curious, friends. I would like to thank you for tuning in today. Download, leave a review, follow and share this episode and the podcast with your friends, family, really whomever you like. You can find me on Just Curiosity Pod on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and you can email me at justcuriositypod@gmail.com, as I would absolutely love to know your thoughts, insights, comments, and all those juicy stories. But most of all, stay curious, friends. I'm Shelly D, and this has been Just Out of Curiosity.